Hi, everyone. This is our first group for Emotional Eating Solutions. It's an 8-week virtual group where we get together on the phone and talk about emotional eating and emotional eating solutions. And I am really excited to have you here because I know I'm really confident that at the end of these 8 weeks, you're going to come away with some really powerful understanding about eating, some powerful understanding about yourself, and really feel like you're on a really good track. My name is Kim McLaughlin, and I am a motivational coach that works with people around around emotional eating issues. And you can find me at www.feedyoursoulunlimited.com. FeedYourSoulUnlimited.com. I have blog there, all kinds of things. I suspect everybody on the call has probably been to my website and has seen some of the information that I have. And I blog regularly and really want to be a part of the community so that you can feel like you're getting the most up-to-date information that I have about emotional eating. So I'm really excited that you chose to be part of this emotional eating solutions group, and a part of this process. As I said, it's an 8-week virtual group that will really help you examine and look to end your emotional eating. You can expect that you're going to uncover your triggers to your emotional eating and really dive deep into strategies that are going to really help you. We're going to go over each week different modules, different ideas about emotional eating, and each week we're going to come away with some strategies. I am all about being into action. Understanding is fabulous and important. Insight is fabulous and important. But being able to actually then do something is equally important. And what I love about these 8 weeks is that each week you can practice a strategy connected to what we're talking about, and then you can report back. You can come back in every week and talk about what worked, what didn't work, what feelings are coming up, what thoughts are coming up, what's keeping you stuck. So I really encourage you to use this as your group, as your time, to explore what's going on. Sometimes people on the calls have felt shy, and in other groups, people have felt shy to talk, and I just want you to know that that's okay. You can send me an email if you have a question, and then I'll answer it online. It's also okay to be shy, but to just stick your neck out a little bit to ask the question live, because what I find and what the feedback has been is that what other people talk about as their question or their concern or their problem is really enlightening to everybody else. So you might think this only affects you, and I've come to find with 100% consistency, it is something that is affecting everybody. It might not be affecting them that in that moment, or it might be something in the future that they realize, oh, what that person was talking about in the group, really now I see it for myself, or they realize, like, this is something that used to happen for me. It's not happening, or I feel a little better about it. So it's a great opportunity for you to share what's going on for you. And I also know that it can be embarrassing to put yourself out, to be out there and kind of not know what the response is going to be. I think you're going to find as you work with me in this group that I'm really open to what everybody has to say. I'm open to ideas. I'm open to people challenging me. I'm open to wherever you're at to help you get to the best possible place you want to be. So I hope that gives you an idea that there's freedom to do this and freedom to share what's really going on for you. So as I said earlier, we're going to meet each week by phone, and we also have you on phone or on mute, so we have a clear call. And remember that you can press *6 to raise your hand if you have any questions. I will have regular opportunities for questions as we go along. So one of the things that can be helpful for you as we go through this process is for you to have some paper near you to keep your thoughts, your feelings, your ideas, your struggles, your questions, and you can write it down while we're talking. Also for you to keep notes about ahas, things that you go, yeah, that's me, or oh, I don't know that, I don't know yet about myself. And it can just be an added opportunity for you to get some deeper learning. I really encourage you also to be in a quiet place. I do this at lunchtime to give, because I, you know, everybody's got to take a lunch break, whether you're working, whether you're at home, wherever you are, everybody's got to take a lunch break. And so this can be your 50 minutes of quiet to really hear what's going on. So I, or really hear things for yourself. So I really encourage you to be in a quiet spot. You might be driving, which is okay. And obviously, no writing until you get home, until you can be in a safe spot to write anything down. And you'll get a recording every after every group, either within the 24 hours, I will get you a copy of the recording. And we'll have our own private webpage where I will post every week what the call, what we did on the call, any homework that we had, any links to things that you might need, and I will post it there. So every week you'll have a place to go, this one spot to go, to get all your information. And I'll also send out emails regularly to remind you where things are at, to encourage you to send me questions, to encourage you to look at certain things that are going on in your life. And so it's all meant to be supportive, not meant to be have-tos, but it's really meant to be encouragement and support as we move along. So those are the housekeeping pieces that I have for everybody. And I just wanted to talk about why, what I've heard from everybody who's on this call, why they've told me they're here. Some of these might fit for you. I suspect some of them do, and there might be more. But I just kind of wanted to kind of qualify everybody to know why we're all here together. And one of the reasons why you might be here is that you probably overeat in a way that bothers you. You overeat in a way that you go, this doesn't work for me. And this part about overeating is not about the weight. It's not about how much weight you have or how much weight you think you need to release. Because this is the part about just overeating in a way that you go, darn, that was more food than I needed, or darn, I don't like what I ate, or I just ate food that I know is going to upset my stomach, or I just ate food that I know is going to make me feel bloated or going to make me sick. And that's one reason why people are here, is overeating in a way that bothers them. Another thing, reason why you might be here, is that you might feel out of control with food, where people tell me this a lot, is they feel that they can't stop eating. They can't say no. If the food is there, if the food is on their plate, if the food is on the table, they feel that they have to eat it, and they feel out of control. They can't not buy a certain candy or cookies or whatever that are in the store, and they feel out of control and ashamed, feel really, really bad about themselves. Another reason why you might be here is that you see food as good and bad. You kind of qualify it as here's the good food and here's the bad food. And we're supposed to eat the good food, which generally by everybody I've ever talked to, is the good food are things that are quote-unquote healthy, have no fat, have no sugar, don't taste good, don't have a great texture, and those are all good foods that we're supposed to have. And then we see food as bad, and those are the foods that are yummy and fabulous and taste great and have a lot of calories and are sweet and salty and fat, you know, really fatty kind of food, and those are seen as bad foods. And so We're going to talk about that a lot during these weeks, about the idea of good versus bad food and why I might challenge you, or actually I'll say I will challenge you, to look at food as not good or bad, but just as food. And so that's something really important to look forward to. The other thing, reason why you might be here is you might find that you deprive yourself and then binge. You might find that you say, I can't eat that, I can't eat that. Kind of even starve yourself where you're really hungry, where you can't have things that you really want. And then you find later on that you have, for as much as you deprive yourself, you have then a binge where you overeat, where you eat the food that you had previously said you shouldn't have, that was bad food or for the food that you're supposed to deprive yourself of. And that can be a huge challenge for people, huge challenge. Another reason why you might be here is you might see that you eat for emotional reasons. You might already know that what the emotions are. You might already know that they bother you. You might know what emotions come up and lead you to overeat. Or you also might wonder and say, I think I eat for emotional reasons, but I'm not really sure what they are. And we're totally going to become more clear on that as we work together. But the other thing that might happen is you might have guilt overeating, for your overeating, or shame, which is what I talked about earlier. But the guilt that you overeat, which is a feeling of feeling guilty that I can't believe I overate, I can't believe I ate that, I wasn't supposed to eat it, that was wrong, I'm bad for overeating, and I feel ashamed that I overeat. And lastly, another reason why you might be here is you're uncomfortable with your weight. You're uncomfortable with how much you weigh. You're uncomfortable with the fact that you might be gaining weight, or that you've gained a lot of weight, or that you can't really lose weight. And you feel bad about yourself, and you feel really bad about your body. And as I've told many of you that I've already talked to, I am not a nutritionist. I am not a doctor. I am a licensed therapist, but I'm not working here with you as a therapist. Many of you already have therapists that you're already working with, but I'm really working you as a coach, as a motivational person, as a person to help you understand what eating is about, but also we're going to check out what your weight means to you, what your body means to you, and really free up the shame that many people have about their body size and what we look like. If any of those fit for you, and I'm sure some of them do, you are in the right spot. And I promise, as we move along these 8 weeks, we will work on these. We will look at these. We will talk about them. We will have homework about them. You will get clarity. I know you'll get clarity from today to 8 weeks from now. You will just feel in a whole different place. So what you all might be thinking is who is Kim, and why do I think I should be the one or can be the one to even be here to talk to you about this? Granted, I've had a lot of training, and I've worked with a lot of people on emotional eating issues. I'm trained in intuitive eating, which I find really helpful. I've also am very familiar with the 12 steps, especially the 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous. So I know a lot about overeating from a technical standpoint. And also what qualifies me is the personal place that I come from. And I just thought I would tell you a little bit about my story so that maybe you could hear where I come from, and where you come from might be similar, but it really probably will be different. We all have our own story, but I always think it's important in the beginning for you to get where I come from so you can hear what qualifies me. I'm not somebody who just teaches this information and hasn't had any kind of personal experience with it. So what qualifies me is I'm a child of divorce, or I'm an adult child of divorce. But what I know is, what I notice is that from the pictures especially of me around the time my parents got divorced, is about when I was 7 years old, my weight increased substantially. You could see it from, you know, those school pictures, you know, from 1 year to the next. You could see a significant change in my face and in my body about how much larger I was. I have no idea what the pounds were. I didn't ever look at that back at that age. That's kind of young to do that. But I know that by now, looking back, having some kind of, obviously a lot of time to look it over, I can see that it was clearly attached to my parents getting divorced. So what happened after that is I gained weight, and my mom started to notice it, or she started to talk about it, and other people would talk about it. I got teased. It's called all those horrible names that people are called, and I was really ashamed of my body. I was ashamed of how I looked. I was ashamed that I had to shop in the big girl section, you know, kind of the larger sizes than the regular sizes, and I was just horrified when, you know, my mom would take me to the bigger girl section and they weren't the cute clothes like the other kids got to wear because they were larger sizes. And so I felt pretty ashamed of how I looked. And what started to happen is at my mom's prompting, and no disrespect to my mom, she was a mom of the time, and she offered a diet to me and offered that maybe I could try a certain diet and help me lose weight. And what I found was the food was nasty. There were certain requirements that I didn't like. But what I liked was that when I would do those, I would lose weight. And I would lose weight, but then when I stopped whatever that diet was, whatever that plan was, I would gain the weight back. And what happened over the years is that I became obsessed with food and obsessed with my weight. And what happened even worse is that I felt bad about myself and really thought that there was something wrong with me. I really thought I was defective because I had this problem with food. I, you know, kind of showed my, you know, when we have problems with food, some of the time, for some of us, we show it on the outside by our weight and by our size. And that was really embarrassing for me. So what happened was that every time I would go on a diet, and I can't tell you I've been on every diet, but I've been on a lot. I've been on enough to know enough about them. And what happened was that every time I would go on a diet, I felt really powerful and excited at the start, and I would lose weight, but then I'd feel hopeless when I stopped losing weight, because there always seems to me when I'm on a diet, I've never gotten to whatever it was I thought was a goal weight. I would always end up stopping because I wasn't losing weight quick enough, I wasn't losing enough, I felt deprived, and so I would overeat. And what happened was that I would be on a diet, and sometimes I would even gain weight, and I don't know about any of you, but that's my story, is that I can gain weight on a diet. Even when I really thought I was doing everything right, and I thought I was following the program, what I found was that over time, the diets it was the sabotage for me, that I couldn't seem to do it, or I couldn't seem to keep on it anymore, and it was really, really, really hard for me. And I was so focused on my weight and really saw that my happiness was really dependent upon the number on the scale, on what was happening to my body. And I felt kind of out of control, like I had there was nothing left for me to do, and felt really depleted and dejected. I guess I would say that I felt kind of dejected. So what I want to now talk to you is about so that is my story, and I to me, that leads me to talking with you about what we're doing in this group. And I think this, to me, is the starting point in our emotional eating solutions. And it's to examine diets. And to examine for you if diets really work, if they really, really work. And I want to start first. I've had to really think clearly about what my definition of a diet is, because a diet is also a way of eating. You know, nutritionists will call a diet just your way of eating. But what we're talking about here is a diet that is restrictive. And for me, the definition is if it's restrictive and it doesn't allow me to eat if I'm hungry and it doesn't allow me to eat what I want, it tells me what foods are good and what foods are bad, and I'm only successful if I lose weight, right? So, and for me, it's also losing enough weight. A diet for me makes me count calories, makes me count fat grams, makes me measure my food so I don't eat as much. And for me, that is a way of eating that's not sustainable. I don't like measuring food. I don't like counting calories. I've tried my Fitness Pal. I've tried all those things. I've tried writing it down. I've tried the points. I've tried everything. And I don't stick with it. And all these pieces to a diet that don't work for me, I've had to give up. For me, they just don't work. And so I've given you a lot of pieces of my definition of a diet. And what we're going to do this week is one of the, looking at the end of my, our strategies. Yes, one of the things we're going to do is have you look at diets for yourself. And that's going to be one of our homework assignments, is looking at diets for you and what did they do for you, and maybe what, and then having you look at what is your definition of a diet. And I suspect your definition will be different than mine. And that's fine. I don't have a need for you to have it just like me. But I want you to kind of consider what works for you and what doesn't work for you. So ultimately what happens is this kind of restricting way of eating, this restrictive way of eating doesn't work because they don't teach us how to eat for the long haul, for the rest of our lives. And they actually lead us to feel guilty and ashamed of ourselves. Let me say that again. Diets don't work because they teach us how to eat for, because they don't teach us how to eat for the long haul, and they actually lead us to feel guilty and ashamed of ourselves. Anytime I ever change my food plan, and I do, I'm here to tell you, like, I play with things to see what fits. My real goal is more about how I feel, how my body feels, how much energy am I getting from the food. And that's what I like to look at when I'm eating, is to feel more positive, have it, the way of eating be more positive so that it makes me feel good. So when I talk about diet, I want you to consider, and also when I talk about dieting not working, I want you to consider what comes up for you about what you're saying in your head and where you're saying that maybe I don't understand, or maybe you're saying Kim doesn't get it. You know, this is crazy. How could I not diet? And just notice that, if that's coming up for you. Just notice that whether your head's saying anything negative about what I'm telling you right now. And that's okay. That's okay if that's going on. And your head might be saying, there's no way I could not diet. I'll gain weight. I'll get that. And you might begin to feel scared by that. That's okay. Just sit with it. Take a deep breath with me. And just know that that's okay. And it's very common to have those feelings come up if you've never considered not dieting. So what I want us to consider is, as we look at diets and kind of continuing with my hypothesis that diets don't work and they don't teach us how to eat for the long haul, is to consider what happens on a diet. What happens on a diet is that we can become more preoccupied with food. We actually think about it when we're on a diet. We think about it more often than we do when we're not, because we're in such deprivation. And so what might happen for you is that you become more preoccupied with food, which makes it even harder to be on that food plan, because you're preoccupied when you're supposed to be eating less. That is tough. Also, what happens on a diet is you can feel guilty and then don't eat according to the plan. And by guilty, I mean that kind of idea of I ate this thing that wasn't on this food plan. Now I messed up. Now it's all messed up. I'm just going to have a free-for-all. Who cares anymore? I'm just going to do it. And we tend to set up some rules rules, the diet rules, and if we don't meet them, we say, what the heck, I'm just going to eat everything. It doesn't matter anymore. And that's where that guilt comes into play and can lead us down a road of self-destruction. Another thing that happens when we're on a diet is that we get fearful that we can't lose weight. Or we get upset. This is what always happens to me, is that I get upset that I'm not losing weight. Get fearful that we can't lose weight. I'll never lose weight. I'll never be a regular size or the size that I think I'm supposed to be. Or we get fearful. I'm sorry, or upset that we're not losing enough weight. So the other thing that happens on a diet is we counterbalance our eating with exercise. And what I have found consistently is that that counterbalance of eating, so when we're on some kind of food diet, they always include exercise, unless it's such, I have clients who are on such a low calorie eating plan from this diet plan they're on that they're actually told not to exercise because they're not eating enough. But generally they'll put exercise, and so exercise will link with food. And what will happen is that we'll link dieting with exercise. So what happens is that if we're not dieting, we don't exercise. And the only way we do exercise is if we're dieting. And what I have with the people that I work with is that we have to kind of reprogram their brain to see exercise as just something good in and of itself. And that is really important, and that's actually something we'll talk about later on in this program. But that what happens on a diet is that we connect eating and exercise, we connect them too much, so that if we're not on the diet, we're not exercising. And I think we can all agree that exercise just in and of itself is a really good thing, just to do it, but it's figuring out how are you going to make that happen. Another thing that happens on a diet, your body goes into starvation mode. And what can happen in starvation mode, you know, you're not getting enough calories, you're not eating when you're hungry, is that your body can crave certain foods and you feel out of control because you're craving them. The other thing that can happen when you're in starvation mode is that you don't lose weight. This is another thing I've seen with people that come into my office and we talk about their food, and when they eat too little, they end up not losing weight because their body is just holding on to the pounds because their body says, danger, danger, there's not enough food coming in. We've got to hold on to the weight because we're going to die if we don't get enough food. And that can be really disconcerting because you think that when you eat less food, you should lose weight. Doesn't always work that way. The last thing, there are many of them, but one of the last I just want to bring up that happens on a diet is that you fear that if you stop dieting, you'll gain weight. And that's because that's generally what happens, is that if you stop dieting, you gain weight because you haven't learned how to eat properly. So what we know about the diet backlash, and some of this I've already said, but I kind of want to put it into context, is that the diet backlash is what happens when we're on a diet, is that we eat less and we don't lose weight because we get that sluggish metabolism. And nutritionists talk about that a lot, about revving up metabolism, about how you can get your metabolism moving because you're not eating enough and it just slows everything down. Another diet backlash is that you end the diet, you binge. Once we're done dieting, we end binging. It's a circle. And the way I see it is that if you drew a circle in front of you, at the top of the circle, we would have dieting. And then, so I'm going to draw a circle as I talk to you. So I'm drawing a circle. At the top of the circle is the diet. And then if you kind of put an arrow down to the middle of the circle as you go around, a diet leads us to binge. And then what happens after we binge is you go around the circle a little more, it leads to shame and guilt. And what happens is that shame and guilt, you go back or up around the circle to the top, leads us back to dieting. And that's that diet binge shame guilt cycle that keeps going around and around and around. Another part of the diet backlash is that you can't trust yourself with food and can't trust your body to know what it needs. That is what we're going to talk a lot about here, is how to begin to trust your body and to know what it needs. Another part of the diet backlash is that you don't feel that you deserve to eat because you're overweight. And this is a really sad comment on our society that when we're overweight, we believe that we're not worthy of having more food, that we don't deserve it. What happens in the diet backlash also is that you can only stand to be on a diet shorter and shorter amounts of time. And this is clearly evidenced by people that I work with that have been on diets on and off their whole life, is that finally when they come see me, they just say, I can't do another diet. I'm just tired of it. And they just see that they can't keep it going anymore because each time it's not sustainable. Another part of the diet backlash, and you might see this is a hard one to let go of, is wanting to jump start losing weight so then you can eat normally. Have kind of a quick diet, have kind of a down and dirty, low calorie, what do they call it? Fat. That's what it is. Having a fast to lose some weight. I'll fast first so I lose some weight and then I'll eat normally. Then I'll try intuitive eating. Then I'll eat naturally. That just doesn't work. Another part of the diet backlash is that you have last supper kind of eating. And that is that eating, I don't know if you guys ever do this, but this is what I have totally done, is that the night before you know you're going to start a diet, you overeat. And that's called last supper eating because you're afraid that you're never going to eat that food again. So you're just going to eat it and overeat it because you know the next day, once you start your diet, you hear that, once I start my diet, I won't be able to have this anymore. So you eat it because you're afraid you'll never have it again. Another part about diet backlash is the social withdrawal. I can't go out tonight because I'm on a diet. I can't go to the Cheesecake Factory because I can't have cheesecake, and I definitely can't manage you guys having cheesecake if I'm not having cheesecake. So we tend to not go out. Or the social withdrawal can also be because you're overeating and binging. This is what a lot of people I work with do this, is overeating and binging, and they'll do it in private. you'll see when you go out to eat, you'll eat normal amounts of food, and nobody will ever know. But when you're in private, you'll overeat. I used to have where my, a long time, when I was a kid, my stepmom would say, Kim, I don't know how how you're heavier because I watched the way you eat and you eat fine. Well, she didn't know that I sneak food. I used to sneak food when I was a kid. I would, eat in quiet in private. I wouldn't do it in front of people. That's not how I would do it. So I would pull back so nobody would see what I was doing. And lastly, about the diet backlash, is that after you've been on diet upon diet, is that you feel like you have no willpower. You think you have no willpower. And you think you can never do it. You think you can never be normal. You think you can never get over it. And that's a lot about kind of a lot of negatives. And I don't like living in the negatives, but I just wanted to talk about what might be going on for all of you, just to kind of qualify where we're all at and that we're all in the same spot. And also why I strongly encourage you to examine the idea of a diet for yourself. And I've been working with people on dieting and not dieting for a long time, and I still find I have to reexamine it for myself. Like, is this more, am I eating in more of a deprived way, or am I holding back on eating what I really want, or is this really what I want or need or desire? And I find it's an ongoing, it's not a struggle, but it's an ongoing awareness. And what I hope is that by what I've just been talking about is that you've come out with more awareness for you about what's going on. So I want to go now into solutions. Remember, I'm all about solutions. I'm all about now what can we do. I want you to look at and think about what damage diet has done for you. What has dieting done to you? What kind of diets have you been on? What's worked and what hasn't? And what has it done to you? I've given you, over the last 40 minutes, I've given you a lot of information about why I think diets don't work, why I and the clients that I've worked with, why me personally and the clients that I've worked with, why we've seen consistently why it doesn't work. But I want you to consider why it hasn't worked for you. And I want you to consider what damage it's done. How has it affected you? How has it hurt you? How has dieting not been your friend? We want to really look at it with open eyes and see what the diet has done. What you might find is that, you found that dieting has damaged you by or not been good for you because you've gained weight. Or you might find that diets have not been your friend because they've changed the way you look at food or changed how you look at whether you're hungry or full. It might be that it's changed your metabolism or that it's changed your cravings and binging. So what I encourage you to do, and this will be part of your homework, is to look at the damage that diets have done for you. Also, what I want you to do is to look at your diet mentality. What is your definition of a diet? How would you know if you were on a diet? Because it's a slippery slope, people. It's a slippery slope. I find the manufacturers, the companies really are trying to manipulate us and confuse us into what works and what doesn't. And I want you to consider for yourself, what is a definition for you of a diet? And that's going to be part of the homework this week. I really encourage you to do that. And I also, I'm going to humbly encourage you to put away the dieter's tools. Dieter's tools are things like the scale, weighing and measuring food, kind of keeping track of, well, not necessarily keeping track, but keeping track of points or quantities of food. We'll do some things around looking at food and having some logs about it, but not about dieting. And we'll talk later on about the scale and why the scale isn't your friend, but just consider that these are dieting tools that maybe aren't in your best interest and maybe set you up to fail. And lastly, what I want you to do is be compassionate. Be compassionate for yourself through this whole 8 weeks. Please be compassionate. Be kind to yourself. Be nice to yourself. Pat yourself on the back, even if you do something that you think you shouldn't. So I'm going to open up right now. I'm going to get out of Q&A mode, and I'm going to see if anybody has any questions. And then lastly, what we'll do is any questions, and then I'll go into what specifically is the homework for this week. That was a lot of information, and I just find we have to start out where we're all on the same page. So I want to open it up. I'm going to get us out of Q&A. And I just want to hear if anybody has any questions or information or something that didn't make sense. Anybody on the call today want to kind of put out anything that didn't make sense? Okay, it sounds like it's all making sense. That's good. That's a good thing. I like that it's all making sense. So if you have any questions as the week goes on, please feel free to email me. And what I'd encourage you to do is over this next week is to write down what diets you've been on and why didn't they ultimately work for you, why you didn't get peace with food when you were on a diet. And the second thing I want you to do is to consider what is your definition of a diet. How would you know if you were going to be on one? What would that look like? Because we want to look at what is our tendency to get off track. So what would be your definition of a diet? And lastly, what I want you to do is to consider, no, I want you to, I'm not going to say consider, to do one self-care technique this week. To do the things, every week actually we're going to do this. It's called a self-care technique, and it's find something new that is in your best interest, that helps make you feel good. The way we move, one of the ways we move out of emotional eating is by taking better care of ourselves. And self-care techniques can be things like taking a bath at night, writing in a journal, meditating, taking a walk, going to the gym, drawing, going to a fun movie, saying something nice about ourselves every day. Lots of things. I'm going to put you guys on Q&A because I hear some noise in the background. So it's very nurturing and positive to start doing something that is a self-care strategy. And each week I'm going to ask you to try something new, try a different one. So for this week, I encourage you to commit to yourself that you're going to try something. I would love to be at something that you do every day, but that might be pushing it for the moment. So I just want you to consider that there's something that you do that nurtures yourself. So make a list of things that you do for your self-care. When I send out the final email, I'll send it either today, by the end of today or tomorrow, I'll send it out and I'll commit to you what my self-care technique is going to be that I'm going to do this week, because I want to be held accountable just like I am wanting you all to hold yourself accountable. But commit to what you're going to do, and then how often are you going to do it? And it is an important method that will help you move out of emotional eating. And so this is going to be the thing, the self-care technique is going to be what's going to help move you into taking better care of yourself. And even if you don't believe me, just trust me. Just trust me that I know what I'm talking about and that it's got to be something that's fun. It's got to be something that you really enjoy. It's got to be something that feels good. It doesn't have to involve any kind of money. I'm not talking about going get a mani-pedi every week. I'm talking about things that you find that are nurturing. And what will happen is once these 8 weeks end, you'll have 8 different self-care techniques that you have practiced that you can use after the 8 weeks are up. And what I hope is that next week when we come back on the call, or you can email me, that you start letting me know and letting us know what self-care techniques you're using, because it's really helpful to hear what other people are doing so that it gives each of us motivation, but also new ideas about what a technique is, a new self-care technique is. So I think that's all for that. So 3 pieces of homework: commit to a self-care technique, write down what diets you've been on and why haven't they worked for you, or why they have worked and why they haven't worked, and then write down what your definition of a diet is. Super easy homework, but very powerful. So this is the end of our call. We're about 50 minutes in. I like to give everybody time to get back to whatever they're doing by 1 o'clock. So we go about 50 minutes. You'll get a copy of the recording. You'll get some ideas about self-care techniques in our private web page. And I am so glad you guys are here. I'm going to open it up again out of Q&A mode to hear if there's any questions, and if not, then we'll end. So any questions before we end? Anything that doesn't make sense or any questions, information you guys need? Okay. Looks like we're all on the same page. I'm so glad you guys are here. If you're on the recording, if you're listening on the recording, I am so glad you came to listen to the recording. Those of you that have been on the call today, feel free to listen to the recording again. There's lots of juicy tidbits in it. And I look forward to seeing you all next Thursday at 12 o'clock, and make it a great rest of the day. Bye-bye.